41. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kata Numasya Asuravyam Avagraya Vajalkasaha Kim Idam Kuta Eveti Vedanto Rajam Ayayuhu Akatadumasya Sorabhyahum Avagraya Rajakasaha Kimidam Kutahivete Vedanto Vrajam Ayayuhu Katadumasya Sorabhyam Avagraya Vrajakasaha Kimidam Kutahiveti Vedanto Vrajamayayuhu Katadumasya Sorabhyam Avagraya Vrajakasaha Kimidam Kutaheveti Vedanto Vrajamayuhu. Okay. Katadumasya, of the smoke emanating from the fire, burning the different parts of Putana's body. Sorabhyam, the fragrance of Agraya, when they smelled through their nostrils. Vraja Okasaha, the inhabitants of Braja Bhumi in distant places. Kimidam, what is this fragrance? Kutaha, where does it come from? Eva, indeed. Iti, in this way. Vedantaha, speaking. Vrajam, the place of Nanda Maharaj, Brajabhumi, I who reached. Translation, upon smelling the fragrance of the smoke emanating from Putana's burning body, many inhabitants of Brajabhumi in distant places were astonished. Where is this fragrance coming from? They asked. Thus they went to the spot where Putana's body was being burnt. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The aroma of the smoke emanating from a burning fire is not always very favorable. Therefore, upon smelling such a wonderful fragrance, the inhabitants of Braj were astonished. So a very short purport, so I'm just going to continue to the end of the chapter. And then we'll talk. So text 42, tetatra vanitam gopa putana gamanadikam shudvatan nidanam swaste shishoscha san su vishmitaha. When the inhabitants of Braj, who had come from the distant place, heard the whole story of how Putana had come and then been killed by Krishna, they were certainly astonished. And they offered their blessings to the child for his wonderful deed of killing Putana. Nanda Maharaj, of course, was very much obliged to Vasudeva, who had foreseen the incident and simply thanked him, thinking how wonderful Vasudeva was. Text 43. Ananda Soputra Madaya Pritcha Gattam Udaradhi Mordi Yupagraya Paramam Muram Lebe Kurudvaha. O Maharaj Pariksit, best of the Kurus, Nanda Maharaj was very liberal and simple. He immediately took his son Krishna upon his lap as if Krishna had returned from death. And by formally smelling his son's head, Nanda Maharaj undoubtedly enjoyed transcendental bliss. So Srila Prabhupada explains that Nanda Maharaj could not understand how the inhabitants of his house had allowed Putana to enter the house, nor could he imagine the gravity of the situation. He did not understand that Krishna had wanted to kill Putana and that his pastimes were performed by yoga maya. Nanda Maharaj simply thought that someone had entered his house and created havoc. This was Nanda Maharaj's simplicity. And so, finally, text 44. Yaitat putana moksham krishna syarva kamad bhutam ashunu yat srate kamarcho govinde lavate ratim. Any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda, the Supreme Original Person. And Prabhupada explains, the incident in which the great witch attempted to kill the child, but was killed herself, is certainly wonderful. Therefore, this verse uses the word adbhutam, meaning specifically wonderful. Krishna had left us many wonderful narrations about him. Simply by reading these narrations, as they are described in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda Adi Purusha. So, thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana. So, Om Gadatya Madanda Shat, Gadanjana Shlakaya Chaksur Miditam, Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, when Krishna comes down to this earth planet, one of the things he does, or several of things, is Paricharanaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam. He comes to kill demons. And when he kills the demons get benefited. How do they get benefited? Because the demons, like everybody else, are eternal spirit souls. So they're not actually killed. That may come as a shock to all of you, that when someone is killed, they're not actually killed. What do we mean? They go on to some other place. As Krishna says in the Gita, Vashamsi Jirnani Yata Vihaya, that when one gets killed, he changes bodies, just like one gives up clothes and puts on new clothes. So it's the same thing. So anyway, Krishna never kills the demons. He appears to kill them. Actually, he kills their body. And secondly, when they get killed by Krishna, they get benefited in the fact that they become liberated, at least, or in the case of Putana, they go back to the spiritual world. So these personalities that Krishna kills the body of are not ordinary personalities. These personalities are specific personalities that have been appointed to fight with Krishna for the purpose of their own salvation. For example, as we've given the story many times before, Putana was actually a person who was in love with Krishna in a maternal way, and what happened is that she got a chance to fulfill her maternal attachment, and also she was really angry with Krishna too, being the sister of Bali Maharaj, and she got a chance to fulfill her anger too at the same time and then go back to Godhead. So anyway, and practically speaking, every single demon that Krishna kills has been benedicted with getting that position, either by a great sage like Narada Muni with Manigriva Nalakuvara, or we find so many stories of all the demons being cursed by great sages, so that they will get the benediction of being liberated by Krishna. So that's one thing that's going on. But actually, there's something really much more interesting going on here than Krishna just killing demons. And that's what we call the esoteric reason for Krishna killing the demons. The esoteric reason for Krishna killing the demons, esoteric means like hidden, his own purpose. There's two words, exoteric and esoteric. Exoteric means something everybody knows, like Krishna kills the demons, he liberates them. Esoteric is, why does he do it? He doesn't have to do it because he's God. One of the qualities of God, amongst many qualities, is that he is optikama. Optikama means basically whatever he wants, he gets just by wanting it. Just like in the West, we have this story of Aladdin's lamp, right? Anyone's heard of that story? No? No one's heard of that story. You've heard of the story. That Aladdin somehow or other discovered this lamp. This is actually a story that's told in the 1001 Arabian Nights book. That's a whole other story within a story. And so he gets this lamp and he rubs it and a genie pops out. And the genie says, "Your wish is my desire." And Aladdin is complete ecstasy. Of course, he doesn't understand, he has to be killed later on. But anyway, so we would all like to be in that situation where we would simply wish something and it would happen. There's actually a bogus philosophy going around in the Western world. It's called The Secret. I don't know if any of you heard about that before. Anyway, none of you heard about it. But there's a propaganda amongst many New Age personalities that if you really want something enough, you'll get it. Just by wanting it. Because the universe is meant to serve you. But yes, it's definitely... There's actually movies about it, books about it. And even I was sitting on the airplane one time next to one of the main lecturers about this. And we were talking about this. But you really have to concentrate on something and want it, and you get it. Like if you really want a sports car, then you concentrate on it, you wake up the next morning, and the sports car will be there. It doesn't work like that. Anyway, in one sense, whatever you want in terms of bodies in the next life, you'll get. Like if you really, let's say if you're really romantic in this lifetime, somehow or other, you like Bollywood films or whatever, then next life, by that desire, you can become a nice pigeon. Pigeons are very romantic. They have so many relationships every day. So, anyway, so basically, that's true to a certain extent. But really, it's not that the universe serves us whatever we want. One desire we do get fulfilled. If we want self-realization, if we want to know the purpose of life, Krishna sends Guru. That's one thing. Ramanda Brahmate Kanda Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bish. That if you actually want to know, just like my own experiences before I came to Krishna consciousness, that I really wanted to know who God was, what the truth is, and I was very frustrated in my attempts to know that. So I was praying to God, let me know you, and then all of a sudden Prabhupada was there. And Prabhupada said, I know, I can answer your questions. You know, just a, it doesn't happen by accident. That's the one thing you get your desires fulfilled of. You understand? One thing. You can be sure of that. If you're praying to God, you want to know the purpose of life, you want to know where you were born, I mean, where you were before you were born, what happens after you die, then Krishna will send someone to tell you. So, anyway, apart from that, Krishna is the only one who gets his desires fulfilled. And when Krishna, automatically. So aptakama means without asking anyone, Krishna gets everything he wants. Because his energies, God has many energies, of course. Parasya shaktir vibhadaiva shuyate subhavaki jnana vala kriyacha. That's a verse from the Vedic literatures. That his energies are all first-class servants of him. A first-class servant knows what the master wants before the master asks. That's pretty cool. I don't have anyone like that. And second class, the master or the boss has to ask. And the second class servant, he likes what he's doing. He does it with great devotion. He or she does it with great devotion. Jai Gurudev. And does it. So, and then the third class servant does what the boss asks. But the third class servant does it with a bad mood. Why is he asking me to do this? Why doesn't he just ask someone else? Why doesn't he do it himself? But he doesn't say it. And a 10th class servant doesn't do what he's asked to do. So, anyway, I'm not saying how many or what type of servants we have experience with, but anyway, whatever. So, but Krishna's energies, which are all persons. It's interesting that God's energies, everything's personified. Because in the spiritual realm and amongst God's energies, they're all persons. They're not just like dull matter, like we see this desk here or this stand. It's just dull. It's not a person. I'm not going to start talking to it. You know, of course, sometimes you have these cartoons where children are talking to animals and children, isn't it? Or children are talking to their car. Of course, nowadays you can talk to your mobile phone and say, okay, Google or something like that. I got to be careful because they don't respond to me now if I say it too loud. But basically, matter is dull, has no consciousness. But Krishna's energies, they have consciousness. I mean, just like you have the material energy, just like in the Hindu culture, you worship Durga, right? You all worship Durga, hopefully not. Hopefully you understand that by watering the root of the tree, that is, worshiping God, everybody else gets watered, everybody else gets worshipped. That's Krishna consciousness. So we don't have to worship the demigods anymore. No need. Anyway, the demigods are all servants of God. So basically, we all understand there's Durga, who is the material energy, and she is also called Vaishnavi. She's a pure devotee of Krishna. And then Durga expands from the internal energy, the spiritual energy of Krishna. That's Yogamaya, and she's a pure devotee of Krishna. And Yogamaya expands from the other Shaktis, and then ultimately all the Shaktis expand from Srimati Radharani. And I don't think we need to mention that Radharani is a pure devotee of Krishna. Because Radharani is, I mean, her whole consciousness is pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, all these energies, they serve Krishna directly when Krishna wants. And so there's no need, getting back to the point, there's no need of Krishna coming down to kill demons. Because the energies could do it. The devotees could establish religious principles. The energies of Krishna can protect the devotees and protect pious people. So there's no need. So why does Krishna spend his time dealing with witches? Or spend his time dealing with these different entities that he killed? The answer is, Krishna's having a good time. When we talk about God, we should understand that he is the supreme enjoyer, doesn't need to do anything, doesn't need to go to work. All of us need to do something to accomplish something. Like many of you have to go to work, or some of you retire. But at least your work is preaching, right? Like with Jairam, his work is preaching. It's not that he's retired. He's vanaprastha. So he has to work, because if he wants to bring people to Krishna consciousness, what do you have to do? You have to go out. You can't just sit here and say, Krishna, send everybody. It doesn't work. You can worship the deities in the temple like till you're blue in the face, and people are not going to come unless you go out. So we have to work to accomplish something. But Krishna doesn't have to work to accomplish anything. So why does Krishna spend his time doing it? Why doesn't Krishna just sit back and relax? Have Lakshmi or his girlfriend's massage his feet. Actually, even when the Lord has his expansion, the Mahavishnu creates the universe, we may say he's relaxing, but he's creating the universe at the same time. So why does Krishna do this, you know, with the killing of the demons? Because he's Rasaraj. So Rasaraj means he's the enjoyer of different tastes. Rasa means taste. Just like all of you, you like different tastes when you're tasting food, right? You like a sweet taste, a sour taste, a salty taste, a hot chili taste, right? Actually, they call the chili peppers sharks. You ever heard that before? No? We used to do that in ISKCON in the early days. People would put a lot of chili peppers in the dal and said, look at all the sharks swimming around. So you like all these different types of tastes. That's what makes eating nice. And so Krishna, he likes different tastes too. Not only in regard to food when Krishna eats, because God actually eats, but also in regard to relationships. And God likes relationships. Like Prabhupada said, that we should not depict Krishna, God, by himself. You know, sometimes there are pictures of Krishna just floating up there in the atmosphere, you know, with a big om around him. I'm sure some of you have seen those pictures. That's ridiculous. I mean, where did Krishna ever go into outer space by himself? Isn't that ridiculous? I mean, where would Krishna is there in outer space and there's an om around him and he's just floating? Doesn't even have a spacesuit to go into outer space. So what's the use? But actually, wherever Krishna is, he's surrounded by his devotees who have relationships with him. And that's what he's enjoying. Krishna enjoys relationships more than anything else. Just like even in this world, people enjoy relationships. People don't want to be alone, lonely in their old age. I mean, just like you see sometimes that a man and woman are married and one of them passes away, one of them dies, right? And then a few days later, weeks later, what happens? The other person dies because they lost their relationship. They're sad. Or you go into old people's homes where people are alone and the family visits them once a week, or not even once a week, sorry, once a year, or once a month. The person's miserable, isn't it? Just miserable. That's why in our culture, you know, the Indian Vedic culture, the parents are supposed to be taken care of when they get older. Not that you just dump them off in the hospice or the old people's home or something like that. It's miserable. So people love relationships, you know, loving relationships, of course, and all types of relationships. Not only they not only love loving relationships, people like relationships where they have to fight. It's fun. I mean, why do they have competitive games, right? Why do they have soccer games or cricket, for all of you? Of course, very few people here in Fiji play cricket, right? But cricket is the Indian game. So why do they have these games? And people are watching. Thousands, millions of people are on TV, are watching TV. Sometimes I go in the airport and I go into the, you know, lounge, and people are watching the TV at some soccer game or rugby or something. And they're really getting into it. They're grunting along with the players. You know, grunting. Get it. It's like going to the zoo in one sense. They're just like animals. Anyway, but they're enjoying. They're enjoying the fighting. Get him. You know, sometimes they say, get him. Kill him. Even they say, kill him sometimes in the games. And they're calling each other names. So all these different propensities that people have, desires, propensities, relationships, they have to come from God. Because where else are they going to come from? Ultimately, Krishna's the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhu matak sarvam pravartate, as Krishna says in the Gita. That I'm the source of everything. It doesn't mean just the tables, chairs, and the mobile phones. It means Krishna is the source of relationships. And whatever we have in this world, whatever we enjoy, God enjoys. Same thing. He's the supreme enjoyer. So therefore, there's the killing of these demons because he's enjoying it. Just like you see even animals sometimes, but to speak of human beings, like when I was young, my family had a cat. And the cat would catch a bird, unfortunately. It's not that we were happy about it. And the cat would play with the bird. Let the bird go, or whatever other animal, and then grab it again and play with it. So because it was enjoying the playing. Or you see little children, or even little animals like little kittens. They play with each other. They're enjoying. Or people are wrestling, or people doing, you know, everyone has different types of activities. Or people like music. You know, when I was young, you know, I went to music school. And so you enjoy it, you know, enjoy playing different instruments, enjoy doing this. And so why can't Krishna also play an instrument? I mean, this may come as a shock to people in the Western world that God, he's a musician. Shocking to them, not to me. It's not shocking to me, because he likes it. He plays the flute. Balaram plays a buffalo horn, right? So, I mean, Krishna may play other instruments we don't know about. I've never heard of him playing a guitar, but anyway. So he enjoys. He's a musician, he's a fighter, he's romantic, everything. He's an intellectual. You know, composes the Vedic literatures. I'm the compiler, you know, S. Vyasadeva. So he's an intellectual, he's a preacher, you know, Bhagavad Gita. He even becomes a driver of a car. You know, Partha Sarathi. That means he's the driver of Arjuna's car. He likes stealing things. He steals butter. He's tricky. He feeds it to monkeys. He likes lying sometimes. That's Krishna. Isn't it? That's pretty amazing. If you think God plays instruments, I mean, if you explain that you go to the Christian church and you say, did you all know that God plays an instrument? Did you all know that God steals things? Did you know God that Krishna lies, God lies sometimes? Did you know that God likes driving the chariot for his devotee? Did you know that God has girlfriends? They probably put you on a cross and burn you alive if you tell them that. Isn't it? I mean, it's just like, huh? What's wrong with you, Hare Krishnas? But if you don't think like that, you are actually minimizing God. If you think that God is simply some old guy who can't do anything except for give life, like the Michelangelo picture in the Sistine Chapter. He reaches out to Adam, the first person, and he gives him life, and that's it. You know, that's all he can manage to do. Or even in Western theology, they have this conception of God being the prime mover. That means he starts everything, but after that it gets out of control. There was one man who wrote a book. His name was Harvey Kushner. Sounds like Hare Krishna. But anyway, and he was trying to explain a branch of philosophy called theodicy. That branch is, why do bad things happen? You know, it's the justice of God, basically. But why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? So he's trying to explain it. We have an explanation. Our explanation is karma. If a bad thing happens to a good person, it's because the last life they did something bad. And they're getting reaction for it. You know, for every action, there's an opposite reaction. That's Newton's law. You know, for every action, an opposite reaction. So we can explain it. But in other philosophies, they can't explain it. So he tried to explain it by saying that God is a good guy. He's nice. But he lost control. You know, he started the whole game going. Just like sometimes in a sporting game, you have someone who throws the first ball or something like that, start it all going. Sometimes a politician will do that. But the politician doesn't play the game. So in other words, God starts the whole game, but you know, it's too much for him after a while. But that's not God. If we actually want to understand who God is, then he's everything, and has everything, and does everything, and enjoys everything. He's not less than us. He's infinitely greater than us. That's the nature of Krishna. That's the nature of God. So here Krishna is doing all this stuff, enjoying like crazy, and liberating these demons, giving them ecstasy, like Putana becomes his mother, ultimately, in the spiritual world. And that's the nature of God. And by hearing about these things, that's what the word Krishna means. We become liberated because we get so attracted. And then our own lives, where we try to do these things, it just becomes like nothing in comparison. You understand? We compare, you know, like if we try to be heroic. Here's one example here. Krishna's heroic. He's called Vira. Vira means Sanskrit, means heroic. I was given the name Vira Krishna. And actually pronounce it beer in Bengali, which some people think is an alcoholic beverage. So anyway, so Krishna is heroic. And he enjoys being heroic. And if we hear about Krishna being heroic, it's just like he's so much a greater hero than any of us. Or Krishna being strong. He's stronger than in the Western world, we have Atlas, who holds up the whole world. Of course, there's no such person as Atlas. We know that's Seshanag. So he's stronger than the strongest, more intelligent than the intelligence, most intelligent. He's more famous than the most famous. He's more beautiful than the most beautiful. He's has amazing activities, more than anybody else in this material world, more than any Bollywood star, Hollywood star, or anyone else. So we hear about this person, Krishna, and that's what the name Krishna means. Krish. And the name Krishna, that is the syllable, Krishna, means to attract. Just like in English you have this word tractor. You've heard of a tractor? Even here you have tractors. Tractor means something that pulls. So Krishna attracts. Krish, just like a description of a Vaishas, Krishi Gauraksha Vanijan Vaisha Karma Svabhavajam in Bhagavad Gita. It means, Vaisha means a farmer. It means someone who uses a tractor. Someone, or not tractor in Bhagavad Gita, it means someone who uses a bull. Because the traditional tractor in the Vedic system was a bull, not a machine. And that's a tractor that can reproduce itself. Nobody's come across a mechanical tractor that can reproduce itself, have they? No. Mechanical tractor, you gotta buy the parts, get a new one ultimately when it breaks down. But a bull can reproduce itself. You get new bulls with it. Of course, you need a cow to do that too. The bull can't do it by itself. So, anyway, Krishna, Krish means attract. And Na means two different things. First of all, it means to negate the material suffering. It's nice, isn't it? Adibodhik, adidaivik, adiatmic sufferings. Sufferings from other living entities, sufferings from the material energy, or sufferings from our own body and mind. That's what Na means. Gets rid of all sufferings. Another meaning of Na in the word Krishna is Ananda. Ananda means bliss, ecstasy. So the word Krishna means to attract you with ecstasy. Krishna attracts everybody. That's a wonderful name for God. It's much more interesting than any other name, practically any other name. I mean, there's nice names like Govinda, pleaser of the cows, pleaser of the senses. Also means pleaser of the senses. Because you worship Krishna, your senses get pleased. If you try to please your senses otherwise, that means you try to please your tongue, your eyes, your sense of touch, then you simply get frustrated. Avartam gyanamaitena ganino nichavayana kamarupena kontiya duspraena lenacha. So therefore, hearing about these activities, as Prabhupada says in his purport, gains salvation from this material world and develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda. It's so wonderful. And that was my experience before I came to Krishna Consciousness Movement. Someone gave me a Krishna book, which is basically what we're reading from now. It's not exactly the Krishna book, but it's the Krishna book is the summary study of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I became so attracted that I couldn't forget. I read one story about Krishna stealing butter and feeding it to monkeys, and I couldn't get it out of my mind. It just like absorbed my mind. I mean, I didn't understand what was going on, but it was so attractive that it drew me to become Krishna conscious. So as far as presenting Krishna consciousness is concerned, we simply have to present Krishna's pastimes, and who will not be attracted, except for people who are engaged in killing the soul or killing animals. I mean, it's important, actually, if we want to be attracted to God's pastimes, to avoid grossly karmically, vikarmic activities. That means bad karma activities. And the worst bad karma activity is to kill animals. It's bad. Because there's another living entity. You're causing pain to another living entity. Even if you buy the animal in the supermarket, the animal, you're paying for the animal to be killed. You're still responsible. Just like if I pay a person to kill someone else, I can still go to jail or prison. Because I'm responsible. Not only the person who kills, but the person who pays the person who kills. So there's responsibility, there's personal responsibility in this world. That's the law of karma. It's not simply some mechanism that God has given us to torture us. It means that we're personally responsible for our actions. And nowadays, people don't want to take personal responsibility for their actions. You know, someone will say, I can't give up drinking because I'm an alcoholic. You know, that's an excuse. Do it. I can't give up smoking because I'm addicted. Well, do it. You can do it. But people just don't take personal responsibility. So karma means you got to take personal responsibility. Whatever you do, you get a reaction for it. You harm someone else, you're going to suffer. To teach you a lesson not to harm others. Isn't it? When we see a living entity being hurt, we should just feel their pain is our pain. That's a spiritualist. That someone else's pain is our pain. Because we are all connected. We're all parts and parcels of Krishna. We're all brothers and sisters. Like if we see our parents or our brothers or sisters get hurt, we feel it's very painful because we have this connection. So when we understand our connection to everybody, then we feel the same way if someone, even a little fish, gets hurt. Anyway, so if someone can avoid that, they'll be attracted to Krishna's pastimes. That, of course, is the first chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 4. Nivritta tarshar upagimana pavoshada shrota mano biramat kautama shloka granavada puman virajeta bana pashubnas. Not. That's exactly what that verse says. That the pastimes of Krishna can alleviate us, can free us from all types of misery. And everyone will be attracted to them, except those who are killers. Killers. So, okay. 7 o'clock. Any questions or comments, arguments, problems, issues? No? Everybody's sleeping? No. I try to keep everybody awake, you know. Doesn't always work. So, no questions, comments, requests? No, not time to greet the deities. All greetings to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.